A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, "You have learned how it was said, 'You must not commit adultery.' But I say this to you, if a man looks at a woman lustfully, he has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye should cause you to sin, tear it out, throw it away. For it will do you less harm to lose one part of you than to have your whole body thrown into hell. And if your right hand should cause you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it will do you less harm to lose one part of you than to have your whole body go to hell. It has also been said, 'Anyone who divorces his wife must give her a writ of dismissal.' But I say this to you, everyone who divorces his wife, except for the case of fornication, makes her an adulteress. And anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery." The Gospel of the Lord. What are we to make of this plucking out eyes and cutting off hands? There have been societies which cut off hands for theft, say. They are not obviously the more virtuous or humane for the lengths they go to in pursuit of righteousness. Besides, think about it. Precisely the point Jesus is making is that whether or no we act on our lustful impulses, they remain a corrupting influence in our souls. Well, do you really think that someone who gouges out an eye or cuts off a hand has succeeded in freeing themselves from lust? Can you gouge out your imagination? What should be emerging from our holistic reading of the Sermon on the Mount over these days is the extent to which Jesus' teaching is self-referential. Jesus sets himself up as the lawgiver and the judge. "You have heard it said, but I say to you." And he refers to those who are persecuted for my sake. And so, by the time we reach the end of the sermon, in the well-known parable, it's clear that the wise man who builds his house on rock is the disciple who attaches himself to Jesus. And St. Paul offers us, today, a way to understand this difficult passage precisely with reference to Jesus and with reference to Jesus' whole career. This is what St. Paul says. "Always, wherever we may be, we carry with us in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus too may always be seen in our body. Indeed, while we are still alive, we are consigned to our death every day for the sake of Jesus, so that in our mortal flesh the life of Jesus too may be openly shown." Jesus' death and resurrection establish a pattern that we are to follow in our own lives. Now, there have been Christians who have literally embodied that pattern, most obviously the martyrs, who lay down their lives in expectation of their own future resurrection. But also many ascetics down the centuries have denied themselves the satisfactions of the senses. They've mortified their senses in order to experience the new life of grace. Well, St. Paul sees this pattern embodied in his ministerial relationship to the other Christians he serves. He, on the one hand, suffers humiliation and physical hardship and continuous setbacks as an apostle, so that, on the other hand, the Corinthians and those other communities he knows may benefit. "So death is at work in us," he says, "but life in you." It's tempting to think of ourselves as buckets, waiting to be filled up to a certain level of holiness by God's grace. And only when we reach the point of overflow, just then we might be ready to start helping others. The early Dominicans had a more Pauline attitude. Instead of thinking of themselves as buckets, they thought of themselves as pipes. Grace comes in just the measure you are willing to share it, to share the gospel and pour it out for others. A preacher going out to the streets in his fine white habit has to be willing to get a little bit dirty. On his deathbed, St. Dominic confessed preferring the company of younger women. But don't young women need to hear the gospel as well? Our Lord himself was not afraid to share the company of tax collectors and prostitutes. The fear of sinning should never paralyze us. God gives us his grace to set us free and to share that new, abundant life. The French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre once said, "Hell is other people," but I think it's the opposite. Hell is being locked up in your own self-preoccupation. So much so that you aren't willing to see the wonderful grace of God around you, because you demand things to work a certain way within you. We know that God is all-powerful. God is perfectly capable of making us chaste in his own good time. That's not to say that we shouldn't adopt certain disciplines. We have to be willing to receive his gifts. But there is also a healthy self-forgetfulness we can cultivate. So, rather than obsess about what your eye has seen or your hand has done, why not turn your eye to something else, something beautiful? Why not turn your hand to a good deed? And that way, you put to death the evil impulse of your hand or your eye. And in exchange, you give and you find life.